So, this is the podcast asking all about the big firsts in our lives.
One guest, a whole lot of firsts, and some surprising answers.
Just imagining your mother walking with you. Being like, right. It's okay, Marty, I'll bring you.
She seems
bring you
quite
along.
Nice. What about her?
You're a wing woman.
My first ride with Lauren Emma.
This time on my first ride, a guest we are thrilled to have with a voice and a moustache that is known all over the country. It's Marty Whelan.
We grew up with this person on our radio and on our television, and he's got one of the most iconic voices of all time. So without tearing the arse of this any further,
yes,
it's Marty Whelan!
It was just that feeling that somebody else would come in behind me and would ruin the lovely intro I was delighted with.
He's like, who are they talking
that's
about?
Right, that's right. Now, I have a confession to make. Did I give you your first fright recently?
You did give me twice in one day.
Twice in one day. There is the Larry Gogan lift. There's only one lift.
Yeah.
It's only one floor. I mean, anyway, we call it a lift. And I came out of it the other morning. And Emma, there's no one else in the building, with all due respect. And I came out, Laura wasn't there, nobody was there. I came out of the lift. And you were literally at the lift to walk by. And we both got an enormous shock.
Absolutely. My heart was pounding for
was
a good like 10, 15 minutes
so
after.
That wasn't your first shock, I suspect, but it was the first shock of the morning.
It was my first shock of the morning. Yes. And then I came out. I went into the bathroom and I came out. And Marty was standing at the lift, but he was like facing into the lift. And I saw him again and he frightened the crap out of me again because I just wasn't, even though I see him every morning, I just wasn't expecting
I just wouldn't like anyone to get the impression I was lurking. I was at the lift.
Around the corridors.
I came up to collect my post. There's no one in the room. I went back to the lift and you happened to come back again.
I don't know if it was innocent.
In fact, if anyone was lurking, it was you.
Hey, Marty, I was just doing my
job. You're the
lurker.
You're the lurker.
So, Marty, yes. We're here to talk about your firsts today.
Okay.
So, will we kick it off with your first memory?
You see, people tell you they have memories because their auntie showed them a picture of them when they were four. And then they suddenly have a memory. And I don't have memories that go back like that. I have memories of my dad, but I don't know what age I was and I was going to school. My dad worked in Cleary's when it was a shop.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
Opposite the GPO. And he would come home every day for lunch. Now, that's insane now. He would come home. He would get the train from Colney Station, so we'd walk from Cleary's to Colney Station. He'd an hour for lunch. He'd get home.
That's going to be my next question.
We lived in Colester, right, which
is
the first stop.
Yeah.
He would get off the train, he'd have his lunch, I'd be there home from school, and we'd have a little chat, blah, 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 and he'd be gone.
How long would he be home for then? Like, it must have been about 15
minutes. Literally home
in
time to have the lunch, be with my mum and me, and then gone. Well, I was an only child. I still am.
That's really cute.
I think it is.
I think that's
I think it's a great memory, and it's real.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what age I was. I was very young. But that's one of my great memories of childhood, yeah. And he was lovely. He was a very soft man.
Like yourself.
Like myself.
Lovely.
He was lovely. Well, thank you.
So you said that you remember your dad being there when you got home from school and stuff.
Yeah.
And then our next question is, your very first day at school, do you remember that?
Nope.
No, not at all.
No. It's not going well so far, is it?
I don't know.
But you see, I liked your first one.
Thank you. You see, first day at school, you're a tiny, tiny person. And I don't remember that. I remember not liking school very much. And we didn't have an actual school where we lived. I had to go to a kind of a kindergarten thing. And then, but my first real school in my head was Belgrove National School in Clontarf. That was where I went. And I remember that. I remember Mr. Kennedy. He was lovely. But anyway, I remember Belgrove with great fondness because it was a long walk and my mum would walk me down to it because it's a few miles. So it would require, you wouldn't send a child off on their own. It'd be ludicrous. And as a result, I remember my mum walking me up and down. I think she did it till I was about 17.
Oh.
just to keep an eye on me to see how it would go. But I do remember that. And I remember the teachers' names, Mr. Harrington, Mr. Kennedy, and Mrs. Conway, who was lovely. Yeah, I remember all them.
Were you a good student?
I was rubbish. I've always been a rubbish student. I just don't. If I love something, I'll apply myself so much. But if I don't really get something, then it's not, you know, I can do a more mathematic and do a bit of Latin pointlessly, but it's not pointless actually in the end, as you discover when you get older. But I wasn't a great student. If I loved English, which I did, if I loved music, which I did, if I loved, I wasn't interested in sport.
Yeah.
As a result, I was rubbish. So if I liked something, I would, you know, and that came with me all the way into secondary school. I just wasn't bothered. And it just, if it didn't interest me, I tended to, I kind of got away with it,
yeah.
But they knew. they knew.
I think that
the results
are
fairly evident. Yeah. You know?
Look. I think that can apply to a lot of people. It applies to me 100% as well. But now
it's
I think
good enough, though.
No, it isn't. But now I think it's completely different because there's so many different avenues, and they really try to see what, you know, kids are interested in, and they go with that route instead. Whereas then it was very black and white, and I know we're at different school ages, but
you're thinking career guidance.
Yes.
No, we had that. We had that in secondary school. I mean, that was and this was one of the directions that was really suggested.
It was suggested to you?
Oh, yeah.
Funny, because when I was in school, I remember saying that I wanted to go and study radio broadcasting when I left school. And I remember being told, oh, you might need to take a year out and, you know, maybe do a portfolio course or whatever.
Really?
And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm doing. And I went and I got 600 points out of 600 in my portfolio and I got into college.
Oh my God,
really?
But like nobody ever really said, I was a talker. I always talked. And nobody ever said, maybe she'd be good doing something, you know, that involves talking. Like maybe she should get into radio.
I love the fact, apart from the fact you're clearly a genius.
Thank you, Marty.
A stalking genius.
Finally, somebody recognised
it. You talk about going on a course. Mm. There was no course when we were doing this, because we hadn't a clue. We just love music. And remember, Gerry Ryan and I are part of the same Dublin
alumni.
Legacy. More than that. We're the same school. We're pals in school. And we went to each other's weddings, and we know each other for 100 years, and I know Maura, his wife. And so we know each other a long time.
Yeah.
So we're 3 days apart.
Stop
it. God.
No. I'm the 7th of June. He is the 5th. So there you go. Geminis. Genius. Geminis.
Well, they come
lovely twos. People, especially people. We, therefore, there was no course. You just like music. Mm. You know, like he'd be into Peter Gabriel and I'd be into Deep Purple. It didn't matter. You were into music.
Yeah.
And that was all it was. And then you slowly but surely maybe drifted into this. Because he went off to study law. I went off to do insurance and stuff. So, you know.
But I think I think that is very apparent. Even now, you can go in and do a radio broadcasting course in college, but if you're no good at it, you're not going to make it. And that's what I tell people all the time when they're messaging me. I'm like, do something else.
I don't know. I've heard a few on air.
I'm like, is that a dig? Is that a dig?
It's also not to be afraid to have an opinion. No, be careful with your opinion. But not to be
narrow-minded,
monosyllabic, and not to have an opinion. Have an opinion. Let's see how that plays. And also try and have a bit of fun when you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because it's about, to me, this is about fun. This is the radio you guys are involved in. And, you know, quite frankly, the radio I'm involved in. There is another radio and that's a different world. That's journalism and it's serious. Mm-hmm. And you can't be acting the maggot because you can't be acting the maggot.
Yeah.
End of. But I quite like what I do. But that's always been what I've done. So therefore, don't be afraid. In other words, if you don't get the journalism thing, don't let that put you off.
Exactly.
There are other ways into this. You know, sleeping with management is gone now. Apparently.
We don't encourage that. We definitely do not encourage
that. Apparently
that's
gone.
But speaking of fun, you mentioned there that you have a lot of fun with your job. So growing up, we all had fun with our friends. Do you remember who your very first friend was?
My first friend was Danny Byrne. I was an only child, still am. He was one of, I think, 10. I think 10 or 11 in their family, maybe 12. And we just got out of a house on fire. Yeah, he lived at the back of the lane across from where we lived in Dunluce Road. And he was just a lovely guy. And we grew up together and we were fast friends for years.
He needed a bit of space from his madhouse. It was like, there's only one lad in there.
Danny used to come on holidays with us and stuff. Well, we didn't go far. We went down the country.
Yeah.
But so we were great friends for years and years and years. He's my first friend.
And then who was your first fight with a friend?
No fights.
Of course. Actually, that doesn't even shock me at all.
No fights. And the reason is, that's not in my nature. I'd rather, I would always have tried to sort out things. I think that comes from being an only child. I think it comes from being at home and being with mum and dad, who were kind of very keen on kind of helping you through whatever. And the thing about being an only child is you can't hide.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to hide, because if you're missing, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. If there's 12 of you, the chances are two of you are gone missing. And one could have left home permanently. But the fact is, when you're an only child, you won't not be missed. And therefore, when that's the case, it was always instilled in me about reconciliation, about kindness and all that. So I've always been like that.
Your first kiss.
Ah, first kiss. Was it Gail? Was it Claire?
Oh, Marty!
Was it Greta? Was it Jean? I can't quite recall. Let's just say it was probably one of them.
All of the above.
Oh,
I felt like
like you were going to break into Mambo number 5
no,
there.
No, no. What a great tune that is. No. It was definitely one of them, yeah. I don't even know what age I was. I was probably quite tiny, you know.
Yeah.
And you do kind of silly nonsense when you're small.
And were they girls you grew up with?
In the locality, yeah. They went around the locality. I didn't go searching elsewhere. Get on a bus and go, I'm going to Ranelagh to look for a girl, Mammy. I'll be late for tea.
I'm going south side, Mammy.
Just imagining your mother walking with you, being that's like, right. It's okay, Marty, I'll bring
her. She seems
you
quite
along.
Nice. What about her?
You're a wing woman.
A wing woman, exactly. I could have done worse. But no, I think, yeah, it's one of them. That's a long time ago.
This one, I think, is definitely very, very important.
Yes.
Because it's the million-dollar question. It's one that I actually asked myself during the week. I was like, I wonder what this was for you. Your very first job.
PMPA, AXA Insurance, was my first job.
That's job.
Yeah, straight out of school. AXA Insurance was where I started. And I stayed there for 5 years
so
before this place.
How did you
make
the transition then over to here? How did that happen?
Because I was into music all along and I would always be... I collected records and stuff over the years. And as a result of that, I got... I started doing the pirate DJ stuff, and there's a lot of us, some still here, who were doing that back in the early days. So we did discos, we did some of the clubs, Sloopies, and these various clubs that existed.
Where is that?
I'm not telling you. Temple Bar is where it was. But anyway, so we would have done a bit as the years passed, because, and I did not initially, obviously, I started in the PMPA and away I went, and then out of school, and then after that, I started meeting people to do with music, and someone said, what about, and you've loads of records. Like I joined a pirate station, Dave Fanning was on it, a number of others, Radio Dublin, and we went, and the guy who said it to me, do you want to come down, I worked with him in the PMPA, right, like this guy I worked with, and he said, you've loads of records. I said, yeah. He said, do you want to come down and play some with them on the radio? And you're going, what? Like, that's how mad it was. And I went to this person's front room, and I played records twice a week or whatever.
So much easier, but so much harder, because you can't just write into the database.
But there was nowhere to go.
Yeah, so you have to bring everything with you.
Absolutely, you brought all the stuff with you. But you know, there was no dream of ever doing anything with it except
playing them
and hoping that this is okay.
Yeah.
But nobody trained you. Like I listened to the radio. When I was small, I listened to Larry or Terry Wogan, a whole bunch of people on the radio, and that's all you did. So, and all of us were the same. So that when you decided that this is what you wanted to do, then it became really exciting, because you were working on pirate radio for nothing, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was working in the PMPA at the same time. And you used to give me half an hour lunch when the station started called Big D after Radio Dublin. And they start, I know.
It means something completely different now.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Doesn't matter.
Just pass me a note and let me know what I've just said in my innocence. Anyway, that's what it was called. Indeed. That's what we say in a lyric. If anybody says anything like that, we go, indeed. But anyway, so we started. I didn't start the station, someone else did. That started, I was in the PMPA, which is in the centre of Dublin. This was literally 3 or 4 streets away. So I would do a half hour lunch. They let me, incredible, take a half hour lunch instead of an hour. And so I could get off early to do drive time.
That was sound of the moment.
It was astonishingly sound of a man called Enda Giles, who was the manager, and let me off. I just thought it was an incredible kindness.
Yeah.
Because
he
knew, like I was in the PMPA and I was, you know, I wasn't doing the exams. I wasn't exactly fascinated by the business. Loved the people. We had such crack.
Yeah.
But the idea of ending up in insurance just wasn't for me. And I have friends and over the years who stayed and have had a terrific time. So please, don't get me wrong. And it was great for them.
Yeah.
It just wasn't me. So I'd be there in the lovely suit at the desk talking away to the people and loving that. But the idea of it being forever was just not the thing. So that's what I did, and that was the start. So that was my first job, and I was there for 5 years.
And while we're still on it, because I actually don't want this to end.
You're looking for a cheap insurance quote, aren't you?
I am looking for a cheap insurance quote. But you have to look at it as well. That guy, Enda Giles, who gave you that half hour to get off and do drive, like, I'm sure that watching you grow in your career the whole time, he was probably so proud, because he was probably like, that was me.
Well,
I gave him his start.
Yeah.
Well, let's be brutally frank, if he hadn't, I don't know if I would have been noticed by anybody.
Yeah.
Because we were all noticed at the time, because 2FM was about to start. So we were all noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we all applied for jobs and didn't get them, and then you applied again and didn't get them. And then a whole bunch of us eventually came in here at the beginning, which is 42 years ago, which is bizarre.
Wow. Because it was 2FM was 42 there in the 31st of May.
Yeah. Correct. So it's really weird. And then we all applied, and then we were all, the whittling started, the old whittling. And then eventually, I think a half dozen of us came in from outside, and I was one of them. So, like, that was really exciting. And then I had to leave the PMPA, which was pretty scary. You know, it's very important to not be knocked back by someone else saying, I am no good. Because somebody else will say, actually, you are quite good. And that's the point. One person's opinion is not enough to stop you. Yeah. And that's the trick, you know. Never be afraid to just go for it.
I love this. Words of wisdom, but Marty Whelan.
You're queuing a record. There's a tune coming in now.
Marty, tell us about your first girlfriend.
Again, the list is... There are a number of people.
There's a trend here.
You see, the thing is, you must remember here, if somebody mentions a girl's name, for example, and she happens to be in the car listening to this, and she goes, oh, I wasn't. I was the second one. Do you not remember Thing? And then Thing will get on to me, who I haven't any memory of, and say, do you not remember me? Was I not fabulous? And I go, oh, I don't remember you. Who are you?
What I'm getting
so do you see the problem?
Player. I think Marty was a bit of a player.
He was not a player. I am the last person to be a player. I was very shy when I started out. So not anymore, but I was. Let's just say there were a number of contenders. See above for the number of contenders. So you understand my dilemma. I just don't want anyone to feel left out. You're saying to yourself, there's actually nobody. There was nobody.
He's such a diplomat.
There was nobody. Oh, there was never anybody. He had no girlfriends. No fights with anyone. Nothing ever happened to him.
He's remaining tight-lipped.
Marty, I know that you said family holidays were obviously around the country. Now, we will ask you about your very first holiday. You can do it as your very first family holiday or the first time you went abroad.
Corktown, what can I tell you?
Yeah.
You know, north side Dublin, where do you go? Well, the south siders would go up north and the north siders would go down south. Corktown, County Wexford, it was always that, or Arklow. But Corktown in Wexford, which we love. We took a caravan.
Pirates Cove, is that the name of the place down there?
Pirates Cove could be. It used to be called Wafers. I think it is Pirates Cove. And it's lovely. And it was far less busy than I suppose it is now. I don't know, but I haven't been for a long time. But it was lovely. And it was such an adventure. And you made friends when you went away. Because, again...
You had to.
Had to.
Did you find it hard to make friends because you were an only child, or did you think that you kind of pushed yourself to make them more?
No, not at all. My parents offered the money to come around. No, I'm only joking. No, I think in all these cases, misquoted story of my life, misquoted. Oh yeah, you can't say your thing. No, I think it's like anything. You the children kick a football. How are you? You know, and let's go make sandcastles. And there it is. Yeah. Or children see each other on the beach or whatever. Maybe different times, I don't know. But I never had any problem with that. Always, you would make friends. And then you make your own fun because you're doing what you're doing. But you make your own friends. And going to the carnival every night. Great memories.
Yeah.
That come back to you all the time. And these are very special times that you have. So yeah, it always makes me nostalgic for those days because they were very special and they don't go away.
Even listening to you speaking about it, I'm actually kind of getting the feels myself for like thinking about like my family holidays when we were younger and like that, talking about friends and you'd be at the pool or you'd be wherever and you'd see a group of friends and you'd be like, you'd see a group of young people and you'd be like, they look like they're my age, they look like they're nice.
That's right.
Me being the lurker that I am, I'd lurk on over and I'd be like,
hello. Do you want to be my friend?
And it would be as simple as that. Do you want to be friends?
That's
you know,
right.
you could just go up to somebody
but
and say, do you want to be
friends? That's just inevitable.
You can just imagine Emma acting shocked when she comes over beside them being like, oh, hi, I didn't see you there.
Oh, oops, hey, friend. About the kitchen, and if you're good at
the kitchen.
And what was the first meal you cooked?
Let me tell you what the first meal I cooked was: coriander and honey glazed chicken with shopska salad. Do you know what? Do you know when that was?
When?
That was about 6 months ago.
Oh my God, Marty!
I am a rubbish cook. I that's part of Nevin McGuire's book, which I did cook last year.
It sounds lovely.
It is gorgeous.
Like,
Bulgarian salad stuff. It's fantastic. Very Eurovision. And we had great fun. But I would never cook. I never had the confidence to cook. It just wasn't in me. I was never trained to cook, which is a shame, because fellas should be.
Yeah, they should.
You know. And I never was. So as a result, I never had to. And it never seemed to matter because they didn't. You know, you'd put beans on toast, you'd make a, you know, I do a hell of a fry. But now I've got more confidence, I'm now having a go. And we've never been on the radio every week. And as a result of that, we do recipes, obviously, in chat. And he's given me a lot of confidence because he's always saying, what's that thing everybody says? If you can read, you can cook.
Yeah.
So as long as you're not afraid that the family will starve, then it doesn't matter, you know, because there's always something else you can take out of the freezer and stick in. So don't be worried. But in terms of first meals, I would have tried stuff at home at mum and stuff, but not really anything that you would call a dinner or anything that anybody actually ate. But it might have been a fry or something like that for crack. But I'm getting better now.
You enjoying it now?
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And it's great fun. It's about also saying to yourself, there is time for this. To make a dinner for a family, I just think it's fantastic, or for your partner or whatever. I think it's a great thing to be able to do. And I love it. And I have the patience now, and the chopping and the cleaning and the diddly diddly. And the book is out and away you go. So I love that now. I really enjoy it. That's good fun. And both my children are still at home. So they're not, they're not starving.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I'm not doing it all the time by any manner of means. We share, but I do enjoy it when I do it. Yeah. Yeah.
First time you ever got drunk?
First time I ever got drunk? Well, you don't remember because you were drunk. There was one bad one. One really bad one. There's a famous place in Clontarf called The Grove, which is a disco. Well, it was a disco. And we all went there. You couldn't drink there, obviously. It was bottles of Coke.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So it was an underage disco.
Underage disco, yeah. Yeah, mineral bar. And all that. But clearly, you would need fortification before you went. So we did. And I went out. I don't know what I was doing or what I was thinking. We ended up, I had a bottle of, have you ever tasted Malibu?
Yeah.
It's very lovely.
Yeah. Oh, it's too lovely.
Rum with coconut. So we went off and we ended up in St. Anne's Park. How lovely.
Lovely.
On the way, myself and this guy, and it was madness, absolute madness. And I will never forget, because I basically went in the door of the Grove, because you had to have a membership card to get in. And that was fine. And they knew me and we were all in. And I was in the door and I don't think I was there for 20 seconds. And I suddenly went, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
And into the old porcelain friend. And anyway, I had to be taken out. They didn't bar me, which they always did if you were drunk. No, they were really strict.
They knew you were going on to do big things, Marty.
They knew I was going home. That's what they knew. And so and we got home and that was the end of it. But I never forgot it to the day I die. It never left me. The smell of it never left me. I know I'm talking about the Malibu.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Malibu is lovely. And you could have one now and it'd be delicious.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so fact is, I can never drink it again. Because this is what happens. You can't if you do one of those. And I never get it again. And I never, ever drank it again. And I've been with people who do and I go, enjoy.
It's lovely.
But it's one of those memories. It could have been anything. You know, you hear lads going out and having loads of... Like, it was stupid. And do you know what it was? It was just nonsense. It was... I don't know how much of it I drank, but I had enough of it to send me over the edge. And the air, just ridiculous. Isn't it mad?
Did you get into trouble when you got home for being drunk?
My mother put me to bed again. My father never knew.
She never told him.
She never told him. He didn't know.
Very good.
But in fairness, now my dad wouldn't have, he just would have said, that's awful stupid. He wouldn't have, it's not like anything would have happened to me.
Yeah.
Except he would have been disappointed.
Oh, disappointed is worse than when they're mad.
Which is a really important word to use here.
Oh, yeah. God.
Disappointed. You've let me down.
Oh, I hate it. You'd rather be told you're grounded than you're disappointed. Yeah,
that's right. But that's like that gag, isn't it, about the balloon family where the child deflates some of them. The father says, you've let everybody down, including your brother and sister. Anyway, it's a silly joke. But the fact remains, that would have been. But my mum wasn't behind the door telling me I let her down either, do you know?
Yeah.
But it was fine and we moved on. And I have to tell you, that never happened again.
So tell us about your first, now this is one that always gets to me, your first heartbreak.
First heartbreak. I've been married for a long time to Maria. We were only going out and she had an offer to go and stay with her aunt in America. And she went away. And young love and all the rest of it. Yeah. And I have to tell you, I was heartbroken when she went away, because we'd only started to go out, really started to go out.
Yeah.
And America... And you're here and you've nothing and you're not earning a lot of money and you're going to America. Oh, to Boston. All right. And, you know, when you start finding out about Boston, because you didn't have the internet, so you were looking up things about Boston and where she could go and what might happen and all these big American lads and all the rest of it. You're thinking, oh, Jenny Mac. And that was heartbreak. Now, she hadn't left me. She was still my girlfriend. She was gone. But I was, yeah, I was really, really upset.
How long did she leave for?
She was away for 6 weeks. 6 years in my head.
Yeah.
6 weeks. And I'll never forget it. It was really kind of woo. And I was really, really... yeah, worried.
But I think it's totally different doing long distance like a couple of years ago compared to doing long distance now, because you didn't have the contact.
But I mean, there's no mobile phone, there's no internet, there's no nothing, you know. She has to go to a phone somewhere, either in the house she's in or somewhere, to make a call. And I have to, you know,
be there at that time that phone call's coming.
Go to the phone box. Nonsense. So, yeah, different times.
Yeah.
And it was fine, she came back and we were good. But it's just that moment where you start imagining. Because somebody's away, and they're away in a very exotic place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Because again, we were very young, and that's very exotic. And the idea that anything could happen, and it could, you know, she remains a very attractive person. And you know what I mean? And in fact, I'm quite worried about her now. I want to give her a quick call before we finish. So it isn't a breakup, it isn't an end of anything. It's a heartbreak because your heart is broken because you're scared you're going to lose somebody.
That's still really
they're
sweet,
not
though.
Beside you.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it's really sweet because she did come back and you obviously got married. How long have you been married for?
Awfully long time.
Awfully long.
1985.
Wow. Stop.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thought about it. There you go.
1985, yeah. Blissfully happy.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it is.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's lovely that, you know,
this is my first marriage
time.
As well, just for your list.
Probably should have put that on the list. Yeah. First marriage, marriage
yeah,
for
first
you.
First marriage now. It's great for you. We're very good together, you know. I mean, not every day is blissfully.
No, but nobody is.
Happy. Nothing is. That's unreal. But we're great together. And we're great pals. And we're great fun. And we have a laugh.
Yeah, but the industry as well that you're in and the whole way up through, there's a lot of hard work in that. And it's great to know that she was there throughout all of that. So she's probably
we're
super
both lucky in that no one has ever made an advance on me. So fair enough. So we're quite good.
Shockingly, that wasn't what I was getting at. Now, bring it down for just a moment. The very first time you felt really sad.
I think when my grandmother died, because I was very close to her, my nana. She was a big deal. My father's mother. I think when she died, I was incredibly heartbroken. Mm. I was working here.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, I wasn't a small boy. But when you asked me the question about it, that was a real heartbreak.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of losing a relative, because she was very important as I was growing up. And again, we would go over every week to see her. Like, it wasn't someone you saw now and again. She lived over in Kilmainham and Dublin 8. So we'd go and see her every week.
Yeah.
And have tea with her and stuff. So the three of us. So that was a big deal. So when she died, yeah, that was an awful shock when she died. She was an elderly woman. Like, what's wrong with me?
It doesn't make
it doesn't
any
matter.
Easier, though.
No, it doesn't.
It really, really doesn't. No. And it doesn't matter what age you are when it happens. I think actually when you're older, it is a little bit more hard to deal with because you've known them for a whole lot longer.
Of course.
You've bonded like way more.
Absolutely. And she was a joy. Yeah. So that was a really big moment. And I can see myself walking into the church and everything still.
Gosh.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
How does memory stick with you? And she must have been very proud of you working here. So she got to hear you on the radio.
Yeah, absolutely. And these things are all little boxes ticked along the way. There's no harm.
I think that's really
lovely. She was lovely. She was a special woman.
Marty, from sadness to happiness, do you remember a time, like the very first time that you felt ecstatically happy?
You see, the problem with this is, you can give a cliched answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then you try and say, well, I won't give a cliched answer. I'll try and come up with something that makes me deliriously happy. Like, I don't know, meeting somebody famous or all that, carry on. But in fairness, the happiest day of my life was meeting my wife. I fell in love with her the minute I saw her.
Oh my God. Marty, you are breaking my heart.
No, it's true.
I actually
I did.
With the talk about your wife.
No, but it's true. And as a result, I didn't think she'd say yes when I asked her up to dance.
Yeah.
I mean, we're teenagers, flip sake.
So what age 18, did she
18,
meet?
18, 17. She's 17. Oh, and I mean, so I thought she wants, you know. In the Grove, there was a man called Cecil, right, who's only died recently. God rest him. He was 80 years of age. And he was the DJ for 3 decades. Right, so this is what he did every Saturday night, Sunday, and Wednesday in the summer. He played the tunes in the Grove. Right, this is a big deal. And ask anybody from the north side about the Grove and St Paul's College and where we went to school and stuff. But it used to be a hut down in Mount Prospect, anyway, in Clontarf. And they were really nice. I because I love music, I was one of the lads who sat on the stage listening to music.
Yeah,
I wasn't dancing with anybody. bother my head. I wasn't, it didn't matter to me. So I went down for the music, and it was about ten of us who all loved music and went to each other's houses and listened to Pink Floyd in the dark and all that carry on. So we actually went to this situation, and I saw this girl, blah, 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 and Cecil put on a slow set and said, go on. And I'm hiding this, swear to God. And she's dancing with whoever she's dancing with, and I'm still watching her. And the slow set is supposed to be about three songs back in the day when there was such a thing as a slow set. I think by the time you hit number six, people were starting to disappear out the door.
And this is all for you.
All for me. And he's looking at me and he's hitting the watch and he's going, you know, and there's a bouncer looking at me going, go on. And anyway, I went over and I asked her to dance and that was it.
No wonder they didn't bury you. They seemed like this whole love story happening in front of them.
But that was it. And
were you joined at the hip then from that moment?
Well, I was joined at the hip with her. It took her 16, 17 years to kind of to realise how fabulous I could be if she could mould me to her
she's
way
getting
of thinking.
There. The cooking's probably she's helping now.
It. So that was it. Yeah, but for me, it was immediate. So she obviously took a bit of convincing.
Yeah.
As
women do, though.
We do,
Well, you're right.
Women who are worth it do.
Well said. I think it's important. And we never stop talking. That's the trick. Never stop talking.
Do you know there's sometimes vital. You see couples and they're in like a restaurant and they don't speak for it's, like the duration
some
of their
people
dinner.
Say,
and I'm like, how do you get to that?
You see, some people tell me as I get older that's a lovely thing. That they're bound by this silence. They don't need to talk.
Yeah.
I'm very different. I need to talk.
Yeah.
Obviously. And so does she. So we have that thing, which is, it's kind of, I think it's very special. I love it. I love the fact that we want to talk about stuff. And it's not just about the colour of wallpaper. Like, it could be about anything. Mm. Like, you know, you can talk about terrible atrocities in the world. And you can also talk about, you know, that dog needs to be warmed. Whatever it happens to be. And then it's about, let's go on holiday to Verona. Like, whatever it is, do you know? I think it's important to have that relationship with someone that you can share moments. And also that there's something to look forward to as you go along, that you don't have nothing. I don't mean nothing in the diary, just something to say, wouldn't it be great if, or what about such and such? So you keep a positivity in the air.
Marty Whelan, the namesake of our podcast, is My First Ride. And our very last question that we have to ask absolutely everybody
the
is...
The answer is no. The answer is no. What is your last question?
What was your first ride, Marty Whelan? I never thought that sentence
would I actually feel like I'm like, oh, we shouldn't be allowed to ask Marty. He's a gent.
It was in a white Mini Minor and my father was driving it. It was a car.
I was like, oh my God, he's actually telling us.
Marty,
I don't get it.
2FM has really gone downhill.
I know, it really has. Or actually, though, this is the way he used to talk, so we're just carrying it on for you
guys. Maybe you're right.
Check us out on rte.ie/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favourite shows. And if you like us, give us an L subscribe. And don't forget to rate our podcast, as long as it's 5 stars. If it's not, then don't bother.
See you next time on My First Ride.